TFM.
This is J.G. Hertz, the General Mar Talker on Deep Space Nine, and you're listening to Trek FM.
Welcome, Niners, to another episode of The Orb, our dedicated Deep Space Nine podcast. I'm Christopher Jones, and with me, as he always is my esteemed co-host, Matthew Rushing. And Matthew, I gotta say, you know, those seven or eight little springy hairs that come out of your forehead make you look kind of handsome.
Chris, I'm so glad somebody finally noticed. You know, it's not normally something that I get in compliment on, but you know, I'm always thankful that you know, there's people out there like you or Jadzia who, you know, just really that gets their motor running. So
gets their shuttle pod running. That's
exactly
right.
You know, just power it. Yeah, yeah, fire in that dilithium chamber. So
yeah, except for Kira, she's not going to be coming to ask you out.
No, yeah, she's a little, you know, you wouldn't think this about Kira, but she's a little more traditional, and you know, not quite into seven curly dangly hairs. So
sounds like a fairy tale or an upcoming Disney film.
Yeah. Yes, yes, it does.
All right. Well, yes, everyone, today we're going to be continuing our 30th anniversary rewatch of Deep Space Nine with the episode Progress. It is the 15th episode of season one, or the 14th if you count Emissary as a single episode. And here's a quick rundown of the story. Plans by the Provisional Government to convert a Bajoran moon into a massive power plant sets Major Kira on a collision course with a stubborn, sweet-talking farmer who refuses to give up his land. His attachment to his home and land connect with Kira, a reminder of her fight against the Cardassians during the occupation, but she must balance personal feelings with her duty to the Bajoran government. Meanwhile, Jake and Nog set off on an entrepreneurial adventure after acquiring a motherload of Yamak sauce. So, Matthew, you mentioned Kira being a little bit traditional, but this is an episode where we see Kira grappling with that view she has of the world, the things that she's held on to for so long growing up through the occupation, and now she's in this role where she's, as Sisko tells her, on the other side. And she's really put in a situation here with Mollebach where she has to make a decision. And it's a very difficult one for her. So why don't we just start with finding Kira?
Yeah, I think that this is such an interesting episode for Kira, obviously. And I think the biggest reason is already, you know, in this first season, we have been finding ways to push characters forward from where they started. And one of the biggest examples of that is Kira. And the way in which, you know, she, like Sisko says, you know, you came on the station and I thought you were an angry, mean person, basically. Mm-hmm. And what I found is that I like you and I like working with you. And you have really grown into this role. And, you know, I think that it's one of those things where as you get older, I think you can actually begin to relate to this journey for Kira more so, because you can look back and actually see those points in your life, think back to who you were and where you were then, and look at yourself now. And, you know, if you're the type of person who has made good decisions in your life, you may have made some bad decisions here and there, And all of those add up to making you a different person than you were. And in fact, it could be that you've become a person that the one previously would not recognize, right? But that doesn't make it a bad thing. For most of us, that type of growth is exactly what we're after. And so to watch this episode, I think, is just so fascinating because I'm again reminded this is the first season of this show. Mm-hmm. And the ways in which Kira has moved as a character, I mean, I don't know if there's any character in The Next Generation that moved this far.
You mean from season one to season seven, right?
Yeah. I mean, yeah, there are very few characters that really had this much movement in their 7-year run that we've had in one season for one character on this show.
Yeah. And or not even at this point, one season. I mean, we're only maybe 2/3 of the way through, right?
So I find that to be fascinating about this episode. And in all honesty, too, this is one of those episodes where I think that Deep Space Nine really was beginning to find what it was going to be because of the ambiguity of the thematic elements here and how gray it is. You know, TNG may have had a Shades of Grey episode, but this series truly is going to be about the shades of gray that we face. And I loved that. And specifically, you know, what's interesting is to watch Kira go from being a person who lived a completely black and white life to now having to navigate those shades of gray. It's just so fascinating.
Yeah. Well, and she lived a black and white life out of necessity growing up during the occupation.
Exactly. Yes.
And now she's in a situation where she doesn't have to live that way anymore. And she's put in a position where she can't view things in black and white because she's going to interact with many different people. She's going to have to resolve many situations that are complex. There are many more interests involved as well. And so she's grappling with how to transition from that black and white world to the gray world that she's in right now. I'm curious what you think about Michael Piller once said about this episode that sort of the genesis of it was that the season was going on. And he said they realized they had sort of lost Kira. And from this point on, they have more stories where they're finding Kira and finding her character. And the idea that they have more stories in which they're finding her from this point, I completely understand. And we get to things like Duet at the end of the season. But do you agree with him that leading up to this point, that they were kind of losing Kira? Because I feel like in Battle Lines in particular, which we've just talked about, that's very Kira-centric as well and very much about her starting to come to terms with her new identity and her new role.
Yeah, that's an interesting thought. And I don't know, I don't know if I agree with him. I mean, if anything, I think the character that even this episode kind of brings it to light that's really in flux is Dax. That's the character I feel like that they're kind of lost on still. And this episode actually brings to light something that is going to continue throughout the rest of the series, where in some ways they're loosening her up as a character. But Kira, yeah, I tend to be on your side with this one, and in the sense that I don't feel like necessarily I don't feel like Kira's gotten lost. I think a lot of what we've seen has been a good progression from one step to the next of a character grappling with the realities of the way her life has changed and what life is requiring from her now that is completely different than what was being required or from her. And so I think... I guess I don't see that specifically. You know, maybe it was one of those things where I don't know if they felt like they were just struggling to make sure that her arc felt consistent. Mm-hmm. Maybe that's a thing, you know. But I, like you said, you know, this seems to kind of follow up on what happened in Battle Lines and continue to push the character forward to the fact that life is changing and is different. And mm-hmm. so, no, I don't really see them as needing to refine the character. I think that they're just refining her character as they move her forward. And it, to me, it seems, I don't know, it seems like it's been a pretty smooth process. So maybe, maybe this is one of those things where, though, the behind the scenes,
right,
where they were feeling this struggle and they were feeling like they weren't necessarily having the connections and those type of things. Whereas, you know, they were able to resolve it before it got to screen. And so therefore, we don't have that perception. That's my guess.
Yeah. Yeah, that's where I am with it, because I don't doubt that Michael Piller felt that way at the time. As they're creating the show, they're creating the character. And by creating, I don't mean beforehand. I mean, as season one is unfolding, as they're writing all this for the first time, as producers and as writers, maybe they felt that they weren't finding the character the way they wanted, or that they had gone off track a little bit and they wanted to get back to the course they wanted to take Kira on. But I think as a viewer, that doesn't come across. It would be interesting to hear from someone who's watching this for the very first time and how they read Kira's character through season one, and especially up to this point, because maybe it comes across in a first viewing. It's been so long. Again, this is our 30th anniversary rewatch. It's been so long for us since we've seen this with new eyes that we don't really remember anymore how we felt. And also, we were much younger, and so our interpretation of what we're watching was different.
Right.
But knowing where the character goes and looking back at it now, I think they've done a really good job throughout season one of putting Kira at a starting point and setting her on sail for the destination where she'll finally get. And yeah, I don't feel this way. I think it's probably one of those creator things where you felt that way at the time. But for viewers, especially in retrospect, on a rewatch, it reads fine.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. And I think that it's, again, a strength of the show, if you ask me, that a character like this is already beginning to find its footing, and not just find a footing, but to mm-hmm. really have already progressed, you know, in their journey, to have taken steps forward from when we first mm-hmm. met them. And I think that's the hallmark of the show, because, you know, and that's one of the ways in which, you know, we've talked about the show differentiating itself between TNG, is that's already happened for a couple of characters now, because Sisko had that happen in the very first episode. Mm-hmm. And now we've been doing that with a character like Kira. We've already had movement in the friendship between Julian and O'Brien. Of course, mm-hmm. we've created the friendship between Nog and Jake. We've seen movement in the character of Bashir already. And we're seeing movement in the character of Dax. And so all of these characters are actually moving forward and kind of slowly, incrementally changing as characters. And like you said, we're 2/3 the way through the first season. And that's an interesting thing, because like you said, this is the first season and the writers mm-hmm. behind the scenes are still trying to figure things out. But the fact mm-hmm. that, especially in the rewatch, when you know what's coming, that these things are actually working mm-hmm. just goes to show the ways in which they were able to create a consistency throughout mm-hmm. the seasons that it feels like when you do the rewatch, things are clicking in your brain because mm-hmm. they jive with what you know comes next.
Yeah, because they do an excellent job of at least picking up these pieces that they've laid and building on them later in a yeah. way that makes you feel like you've come full circle.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, they do that wonderfully, of course, with Sisko to make what we see an emissary feel like it was all planned out from the beginning when it wasn't, right? You mentioned also how this feels like DS9 is finding itself and what it's going to be. And you and I have often said over the years when people, it happens less often, I feel like, these days than it did, say, 10 years ago, where people say, oh, DS9, it's that show about the war, and Star Trek's not about war, and so I'm not interested in the show. And we tell people, well, yes, there's a war in Deep Space Nine, a huge war, but the show is not about the war. It's about how the war impacts our characters. It's about people. It's not actually about the conflict and shooting and explosions and all, like people probably think when they haven't watched it, right? And I think in this episode, we see the seeds of that idea that everything's about how it impacts people.
Right.
Everyday people. Because we saw, you know, the Next Generation set up Deep Space Nine with Picard and Ro Laren and Bajor, and the idea that there was this conflict, this occupation that had ended, and they need to recover. But once we get into Deep Space Nine, from Emissary through the early episodes of season one, there's very much a spiritual element to it. It's focused on the spirituality of the mm-hmm. Bajorans, the Kai, how these beliefs in the prophets guide the Bajoran people, including Kira. But here we actually get to see more everyday people in Mullabok and his the people around him who are living on this moon. Mm-hmm. They're kind of removed from that. They're just the people who are living on the land. They've built a home somewhere and they're comfortable there, and they're being impacted by the occupation again, right, after it's over, because now the Bajoran government wants to use power sources from the moon,
right,
to power homes on the homeworld. And that means that these people are going to have to be displaced and they don't want to go. And so we're getting down to not a big picture, here's the Bajoran spiritual story, but we're getting down to the granular, here are individual people and how their daily lives are being impacted, separate from their spirituality.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I think, you know, what you're saying is that this goes to show the way in which the people of Bajor are recovering from their experience of the occupation, and that, you know, there are things that they may have to let go of to make that happen. Specifically, ways of thinking. We've already seen that with Kira. Maybe old hatreds.
Mm-hmm.
And also be willing, because the interesting thing about Mullabok here is that he escaped most of the occupation by being able to live on this moon by himself. And then mm-hmm. these, you know, two other people have joined him about 17 years ago from when mm-hmm. this episode takes place. And what he's really, I think, most afraid of is that he feels like he's giving up his safety. He was able to create this very safe environment, and to give that up, he doesn't know where he's going to go. You know, he doesn't mm-hmm. feel like there's anything for him on a place like Bajor, because I think, again, it just comes down to the fear of the unknown, but also mm-hmm. Tons of bad memories and everything. And so, mm-hmm. and if there's anything I would say about the episode where I feel like they missed the mark, is that I feel like you could have tied the two storylines together by having the land that Jake and Nog had end up being the land that they give to Molobok and his two friends. And not necessarily give to them, but maybe they you know, he's able to buy it from them or whatever, because it turns out that the land happens to be similar to the place that they had to leave, you know, and so I would have enjoyed that connection. But still, I think this is a really important part of the story as well, because not only are we moving a character forward in Kira, but we're also moving an entire race forward now as they struggle with what it means to be free and then have to make tough decisions on what their lives are going to look like, what's going to help their people move forward, and what's going to be best for the most amount of people. I mean, in many ways, this comes down to the needs of the many outweigh the needs of the few or the one. I mean, that's what they're having to wrestle with, that kind of, okay, well, government has to basically be utilitarian, because that's the point of government in many ways. So, you know, we got to do what we got to do. And so I just, again, the ambiguity, the grayness of all of this, I think is so well done.
What I liked about the situation with Molobok and Kira, like you said, they could have tied the two story, the A and the B stories together with the land. But within the A plot of Kira needing to get Molobok to leave the moon, they come at this situation with multiple layers. And there's a bit of dialogue late in the episode that I think really sums up the whole situation. Molobok asks Kira, "What are you so angry about?" And Kira says, "I don't really know. When I was very small, I remember there was this tree right outside my window. It was the ugliest, most gnarled and battered old tree I've ever seen. Even the birds stayed away from it." And Molobok says, "But you loved it." And Kira says, "I hated it, because it had grown so huge that its branches blotted out the sun for kelipates, and its roots buried themselves so deep in the soil nothing else could grow there. It was a big, selfish, annoying," Molobok says, "nasty," and Kira says, "nasty, nasty old tree." And that's the most important part. But then Molobok says, "Sounds to me like it had a lot of character. A lot. So what happened? Did you cut it down?" And Kira says, "I don't know yet." And what I like about that dialogue is, in the moment, I think she's first of all talking about Molobok, but also she's talking about this turmoil she's having in her mind, where she remembers how things were when she was young. And now she's at a point where she needs to cut that tree down. She needs to let go, but she's not sure if she can do it. So I think they did a nice job in the writing here of having this one exchange and this one story that Kira tells sum up both of the situations, the one in her mind and the one physically manifest that she has to deal with.
Yeah, because I think it's interesting that there's the manifestation of the tree in Molobok, but then there's the manifestation of the tree in who Kira was during the occupation. And I think that's something that's really interesting on how it works on both levels. And in both ways, you know, Kira is having to get rid of and or let go of these things, and finding that to be very difficult. And I think one of the reasons that Kira is angry is that it was so much easier when things were more black and white for her. And to let that go is difficult when you're required to make these very difficult decisions, because it's not just about survival. Now we're not just trying to live, what we're trying to thrive. And that creates more difficult questions, and that creates more difficult choices. And what's great about this is that the representation of Kira and Molobok here is a microcosm of the macro that all of Bajor is going through. And I think that's one of the things that this series does so well, is that it allows us to be able to understand what's happening on a larger scale, by doing these character stories so well. Because they'll do that, of course, during the war, where you're getting a sense of what the entire Federation is going through, the entire Quadrant is going through, by giving us a, you know, a really heartfelt story about a few characters, maybe just one character, you know, even thinking about the wonderful story with Nog losing his leg. And, you know, so that is a small story that lets you know what so many people are going through as they deal with war injuries and death of family members and all sorts of things like that. So I just think it's this is another place where this show is setting itself apart from previous Star Trek shows in that way. And I think setting the stage for just what TV is going to be in general, as you move forward as well. You know, the best serialized television is this stuff that does this type of thing really well.
Right. And then finally, Kira makes her decision and has to move Molobok forcibly for his own good. She gives him no choice by burning down the cottage. But she's had the argument earlier in the episode that she would not forcibly remove anyone. So this dilemma has played itself out over the course of the episode in her head. And finally, she makes this decision. And it's not that far removed from the exchange that I had just mentioned a moment ago. And with her making that decision, what does it mean for her character moving beyond this episode? And the next time, I would say that we get her at the center of a situation like this would be Duet, which is, we've got three episodes in between and then we get to Duet. So do you think she made the right decision and just actually burning down the cottage? I mean, because she didn't have a lot of choice, right? Because if she didn't make him leave, they're not going to just let those people stay there and not have an energy source for hundreds of thousands of homes on Bajor.
Yeah, I mean, I think she made the best decision she could make. You know, he has made it clear that he does not want to leave and he won't leave as long as his home is still there. And so taking his home away before it's too late for him is very interesting. And I would say, you know, one maybe disappointing thing about this episode, too, is that it's never followed up on, because, you know, she says basically that she'll be here for him, but we never see Molobok again. And I think that would have been really interesting to follow up on this this storyline, because I think it would have done a lot for Kira and it would have done a lot for just the story we're telling with the Bajorans here, too. So, but I mean, I don't know what other choice she could have made. I think she makes the best of the situation. And, you know, if he then wants to be angry at her for a while, but he's alive, you know, I think that's what matters. And, you know, it would have been fascinating, again, to revisit this character and you know, have it be maybe in a couple of seasons and him say, you know, basically, I was angry at you for years, but I've come to love the fact that I'm still alive and I've been able to make a life because of you. And so I just think all of that would have been really interesting. But yeah, I mean, Kira's not going to let this person commit suicide, basically.
Right.
And, you know, I think she does make the right choice in the end.
Sort of reminds me of the this episode and the situation on the moon sort of reminds me here in Japan about the long, long holdout of landowners when the international airport needed to build a third runway and people wouldn't move, wouldn't give up the land. So, well, let's shift gears to the B story here to close out our discussion, because this was a fun element of this story, a more lighthearted element, but an important one also for character growth. We've got the No J Consortium, an organization which we love because of their, they have the best self-sealing stem bolts in the galaxy. But it's fun to watch Nog and Jake's friendship grow, and also to watch. You watch Nog grow in terms of being a Ferengi with lobes, as they might say, looking to make a deal and knowing how to do it, and I think impressing his uncle a little bit in the process, but also the like human intuition or feeling that Jake brings to it that helps them make all the deals they need to make.
Yeah, no, I think that's the thing that makes this fun, and it's the thing that keeps this from being a frustrating pull away from a very good part of a good episode, is the way in which they're pulling these characters together. And I think allowing both of them to be able to learn something about the other, and the way, you know, that you know, they come from very different backgrounds, but they're getting a chance to kind of learn what each of these people hold dear, and what they're willing to do for money. You know, that's interesting. But also, I think too, you know, it's a very human sentiment that land is a good investment, you know, so that was funny to see that come with Jake. And then, you know, to have Nog not really be into that, but then find a way to make it all work. And so, yeah, it's a silly part of the episode. But it is also a fun way to highlight these two characters coming together. And in many ways, I think it allows one more step to make Ferengi more interesting to the Star Trek universe at large, right? And actually bridge the gap in saying, we're not all that different, right? You know, and to find those ways in which we are actually similar between these two characters is really well done.
And you already see at the stage the influence that, I don't mean this to sound like it's going one way, like humans are great and Ferengi are bad, but you see the influence of Jake on Nog.
Yes.
That eventually leads him down that path into Starfleet. And I guess what I would say, I mean, certainly as someone who has lived in various cultures and at this point lived in Japan for almost my whole adult life, a different culture than I grew up in, you know, finding or melding aspects of different cultures together almost always results in something stronger than one is on its own, because every culture has its positives and its negatives. But if you can find the positives in multiple cultures and bring those together, then the result is something that, well, it's something new, and it's something that transcends an individual culture. And you see that in both of these characters. I think it's more noticeable in Nog because he goes on to do something that no Ferengi had done, and something that you wouldn't expect from a Ferengi in joining Starfleet. But you also see it in Jake as well, because if you think back to the fact that Jake didn't want to come to the station in the first place, and then the struggles that he had early on because there's no one his age around. And then as you see him start to find a home here that will help him to grow and find his own path by not following in his father's footsteps into Starfleet, I think that Nog has a big influence in that path for Jake as well, because if Jake had just been there, didn't have a friend, wasn't able to find himself, it's much more likely that he would have followed in his father's footsteps, because that would just seem to be the natural path for him and possibly the only real path available to him.
Yeah, I think that there is a real beauty to the way all of this plays out, in that to truly show that there are many ways that people can take is, I think, such a powerful thing. And it's the beauty, and it, you know, it's one of the things where Star Trek kind of being based off the American ideal of, you know, everybody comes together, and by coming together, we're able to find a way forward together and use the best of all of our strengths to make something awesome and beautiful. And I think that's kind of what Deep Space Nine is doing. It's very much, I think, continuing the TOS idealism in that way, by having characters to be able to rub shoulders together and have that interaction change them for the better, right? And it's not just one side or the other. It's something that's actually happening on all sides of the story and with all of the characters. And I think that's, you know, that's the place where this story really starts to point that out for these two minor characters who, in some ways, I mean, you know, are, you know, they're side characters. Mm-hmm. But by the end of the show, we're not going to think of Nog and Jake as side characters.
Right. Well, that holds true for so many characters on this show.
Exactly. So I think that's the impressive part.
It is interesting that we think here of Jake as a side character because his name, Strzok Lofton's name, is in the opening credits. So he has top billing being Benjamin's son. But as a character, screen time and role on the show, yeah, I would say side character. All right. So what are your final thoughts, Matthew? What's your rating for progress?
You know, I think this is actually a great episode. It's so well acted all across the board. I think Nana Visitor is phenomenal in this episode. Mm-hmm. And all the guest cast is wonderful as well. So all in all, this is one that is so rewatchable, and a big part of that is the performances and the story, the themes. So I'm going to give this 4 out of 5 unfinished kilns. This is one of the best episodes of the season, really, if you ask me, especially up to this point. It's just a really, really well done episode.
Yeah, it's interesting when I think back to season one. Progress is not the first episode that comes to mind. And if you asked me, oh, what's one of the best episodes of season one? Probably, I would bring up Emissary, of course. Maybe Move Along Home. I don't know about that one. But there are others that stand out. But Progress, the story itself, my memory of it is a bit slow because it's interesting to me, actually. I don't know. Maybe I'm weird in this sense that I often forget that the No Jay Consortium storyline is in this episode. I always just think of Kira and Malabak on the planet and the slow discussions in the cottage and so forth. And so this is an interesting example of where they do have two quite different A and B stories going at the same time. But I think overall, yeah, it's a very well done episode. And if you really sit down and watch it and listen to the dialogue and think about what Kira is going through and what Bajor is going through and how this progresses that part of the story in a really important way that kicks the DS9 story forward into season two, where we start off with a very Bajor-centric situation. Yeah. I think it's an important episode. And so I'm going to give it 8 bottles of Yamak sauce.
Nice.
All right, everyone. We would love to hear your thoughts on Progress. There are many ways for you to share those with us. Perhaps the best way is to go to Facebook and join the Babel Conference. That is our listeners group. If you're already a member, you know how it works. If you're not, just type Babel, B-A-B-E-L, into the search field on Facebook, and it should come up. If not, type the whole name, the Babel Conference. It is a closed group, so if you're joining for the first time, please do answer the questions and agree to the rules of the forum so that I can let you in. Once you're in there, you'll see a post on the timeline for this episode, and you can share your comments with Matthew and me and fellow listeners right there. The purpose of the group is to extend the conversations beyond the podcasts, so we hope you'll chat with fellow listeners right there. You can also send us an email if you like. Go to our website, trek.fm/contact. Use the form you find there. Choose to send to a show and choose the orb, and that will come right over to Matthew and me. And of course, you can find us everywhere in social media. Our username is TrekFM. Now, Matthew, when you're not helping rebuild cottages just so you can tear them down, where can people find you?
Well, Chris, that does keep me very busy, but you can find me all over social media under the name MattRushing02. Of course, here on the network, you can find me talking all of the franchises that we love in the 602 Club. So I hope you'll check that out. Of course, so we're talking about the books and the comics of Star Trek on Literary Treks. Chris, we also do Warp 5, as we're talking about the Star Trek Enterprise's 20th anniversary. We've got Saddle Up about Star Trek Strange New Worlds and The Artificial Tango about Star Trek Picard. You'll find me over on the Nerd Party Network with a couple of shows. One's completed called Outpost, talking about all of the chapters of the Harry Potter series, and Aggressive Negotiations, talking about Star Wars with John Mills. But Chris, if people wanted to see what else that you are up to these days, where would they find you?
Well, you can find me, as you mentioned, elsewhere on the network with you, doing all those shows that we do together. There's also The Ready Room, which Larry Nemechek and I do from time to time, and Interphase and other shows. You can find me in the back catalog as well. In social media, you can find me everywhere on all the services. My username is C. Brian Jones, the letter C, and Brian with a Y. Twitter is where I'm most active, but you can find me wherever. So I'd love to hear from you there and talk more about Star Trek. And if you'd like to help us keep our discussions of Star Trek going here on the podcasts, we could definitely use your help to find out how to support the network. Everything that we're doing, both our Trek Talk and our other talk on the 602 Club, just go to patreon.com/trekfm. That's patreon.com/trekfm. You can find out how to get involved, how to support the network. We would not be here without your help. So huge thank you to everyone who's supporting us now. Thank you for helping us keep the podcasts going for so many years. Well, Matthew, I hope you're looking forward to meeting some of your favorite fairy tale characters and baseball players and all those good people as we talk about If Wishes Were Horses next time.
Well, Chris, I do wish wishes were horses. And we want to thank you, of course, everybody, for joining us. And we shall see you next time as we gaze into the orb.